know, let's do an intergenerational missions trip. We'll take children, three-year-olds, and we'll take elementary school kids, and we'll take teenagers, and we'll take collegians, and we'll take adults, and we'll all go do something together. Isn't that a great idea? Well, there are problems with that idea. One of them being is finding a place that will host something like that. Our first trip that we did with that model in mind, we didn't have the three-year-olds with us that time, was to Kansas City in 1992 to an inner-city mission, and one of the places, or ministry, and we did repair work for homes. But one of the places we went to, and we talked to the people that lived in the apartment, talked about gunshots and showed us a gunshot hole in the wall of the apartment. And we thought, this is not exactly conducive to the kind of intergenerational thing we're looking to do. But then we heard about the Collegiate College Habitat for Humanities Collegiate Challenge and a site in Mississippi. It was in rural Mississippi, in Cahoma, a tiny town of former sharecroppers that was desperately in need of decent housing. And not only was it promoting and doing facilitating these collegiate challenges, so they were set up to do groups to come in and do work, but it was in a rural area, and they had a converted elementary school with lots of places for our kids to be outside and to be safe. So we ended up in 1993 going with a group of 33. That's kind of a sacred number, right? 33 children, young people, collegians, and adults for our first trip that, as many of you knew, really has grown to be something different. So what I wanted to do, because what started happening after I, you know, setting the historical stage, I started having all these kind of a slideshow in my mind. And because of the wonders of modern technology, I can share some of the slideshow that went on in my mind. So if you could pull up, Chris, there's holy ground. We're standing on holy ground, for the Lord is present, and where God is holy. So, I practiced this yesterday. It worked great. You always hear that, right? Thoughts? Is there a button on here to turn it on? You want to come? So, somebody want to show me where the button is?
This is on the side.
Yeah. Is it slider? Have you done it, Ron? Wrong side. All right. So much for practicing. This is Joe Carton. And you can go ahead and turn the lights down so we can see. Joe was the leader of the Cahoma Habitat for Humanity affiliate. It was Joe that taught us holy ground. It was also Joe who taught us that we always should leave the work site clean. It was Joe who taught us that really what we were there for, as much as building, was building homes, was building relationships with people. So he was a phenomenal model of what it meant to follow Jesus and to serve Jesus. And he had a young child himself, and he was great at including our children. But whenever I sing Holy Ground, I think of Joe, because Joe is the one who first sang it for us, and that as we were sitting there, I can remember sitting in that converted elementary school feeling very strongly, this is holy ground. We're standing on holy ground. The Lord is present. These are holy hands. But then as the slideshow continued in my head, these images of people, of Jubal as a collegian, not much older than Josiah, working, playing basketball in the gym. My children, yes, those are power tools, and yes, he's only 13. Couldn't do that today. Of the Mustang kids, yes, the dog did come home. the Sutton children, Bylers, Chris Chubbuck, of adults and kids working together, not just adults, not just kids, not just teens, working side by side, hanging drywall, painting, leaping off of roofs. And then the images expanded and went sideways. We didn't get that turned around. As the children grew up into young adults and continued to find Kahoma to be holy ground, where their faith grew and where some of them returned to serve. David Warfel, serving for 2 years as the coordinator of the Clarksdale affiliate. And their children, places where holy ground, where you grow, where people can grow in faith. Do you recognize yourselves, huh? In case you don't recognize them, we've got Josiah, Theo, Charlie, and little Sam Nate. Warfel! Sam Nate did go too, but that's not him. He was bigger. And then those young people who grew into adults and created out on this ground a whole nother ministry, not Habitat, but a ministry to the young people of that town, where children, this is a young man who, when Anya was an aide in his kindergarten class, made a connection with him and others, and now is graduating from high school. Holy ground. We can turn the lights back up. So that would have been my song sharing, which you can see I was ready. It's too long for the song sharing time. But it left me with this feeling of awe and amazement that what Sharon and I were hoping for, that God did in such a much bigger, broader, more expansive way than we could have ever imagined, this passing on of faith, the growing of faith, the expansion. And it was at this point that I actually started then expanding the idea of ground, because Don Shea was in town. And some of you were here when Don was in church a few weeks ago. Don and Sue Ellen were part of our fellowship in the 80s. Don met his wife, Sue Ellen, here in 87. They moved to South Africa as part of us. They've ministered in South Africa for 30 years as part of us. And when Don shared briefly in the service, he said, "When I go to church on Sunday morning, I think of New Covenant. Every Sunday, I think of New Covenant Fellowship." And I thought, our ministry and what we've done with children and youth in Kahoma and adults is just one example of the fertile soil that New Covenant has been. And what's the difference between ground and soil? And I then read the parable of the sower, which is what I'm going to pass off to Jim. So if we could have, I can do it myself. A farmer went out to scatter seed. As he was gathering seed, some fell on the path and the birds came and ate it. Other seed fell on rocky ground, where the soil was shallow. They sprouted immediately because the soil wasn't deep. But when the sun came up, it scorched the plants and they dried up because they had no roots. Other seed fell among thorny plants. The thorny plants grew and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and bore fruit. In one case, a yield of 100 to 1. In another case, a yield of 60 to 1. And in another case, a yield of 30 to 1. What's the difference between ground and soil? You'll notice in one sentence, other seed fell on rocky ground where the soil wasn't deep. Ground seems to be holy ground, God is present, but it doesn't seem to have the life that the soil has. What's the difference between ground and soil? And is this parable about being good soil as individuals, having hearts, having working on our lives so we're not anxious, so that we are open to the sea, where we're not drying up or we're not choked out by care? Is that what it's about? Or is Jesus talking about, as Ron talked about, maybe we're looking at, and shouldn't look at this through an individualistic lens, but through an us lens. Maybe the soil is us. Maybe the soil, which is alive, is an image for God's church, which is so diverse and alive. Man, at this point, I thought, I know somebody who knows more about parables and more about soil than I do, so I'm going to let him finish. Jim?
So Barbara asked me to speak about this parable from the perspective of a obsessive compulsive gardener. And I thought, what authority or what on what ground do I have the right to talk about this? And I think there's some clues in the text itself. This parable occurs in all three of the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Each starts by mentioning the location, which is important because in each case, Jesus has moved out of the church, out of the temple, out of the synagogue, and taken the message to the streets. He can't seem to be heard in the institutional church, so he moves out where the people are. He takes it to the streets. And he also decides that he's going to teach in a way that provokes thinking and comparisons and ideas. So he tells stories, he tells parables. But unfortunately, even his closest followers still don't understand what he's talking about, because we find that right after the parable, his disciples come up to him and say, "What are you talking about? What does that mean? What's that story mean?" So Jesus begins talking to them, trying to get them to think, to work with it. But he doesn't like give them the times table, 2 + 2 = 4, now you've got it memorized. But we know from looking at the Gospels that Matthew, Mark, and Luke each took a slightly different lesson from this parable, which I find fascinating in itself, that even though they're sometimes the exact same words, the kind of application differs in each gospel. So for Mark, it appears that the people that the devil just snatches the words away are just victims. There's kind of nothing they can do about it. But and for Mark, the soil, the good soil, what's the good soil? Jesus says the good soil is the people who welcome the message, who say, "This is what I wanted. This is what I wanted to hear. This is what I want. I welcome it. I accept it." Matthew, on the other hand, for him, the key word is understanding. The devil snatches the word away from people who don't understand what it's about. And the good soil, he says, is those who understand the message. So for Mark, it's those who welcome and accept the message. For Matthew, it's those who understand the message. Luke talks about, and he sounds almost like Campus Crusade. He says the devil snatches the message from those who don't believe and be saved. And then goes on to talk about what's the good soil. Well, the good soil for Mark is those who stick it out to the end and who have a good and honest heart. We might say a combination of integrity, keeping our heart open, and not giving up. Now, if you turn to commentaries over the centuries that have been written about this parable, you find the same kind of different ideas about what it means, differing opinions, all the way from this is how we can really tell who's saved and going to heaven and who isn't, and to you got to get the stones out of your life and you got to pluck the weeds and you got to work hard to be good soil, to those who write and say, humankind is stuck, we're all stones and weeds, and unless God does something, nothing good's going to happen. So we have this whole range of interpretation. So clearly what Jesus intended has happened, and people have wrestled with this story and what could it mean, and probably would like you to wrestle with it too. But he did open the door that I can talk about what I think it means, right? If everybody else can do it, I can too. So as a gardener, what do I think this story means? Well, for me, seeds are very precious. And some of the plants that I really want, I have to buy the seeds from overseas, and I might pay as much as a dollar a seed or more. Let me tell you, when you spend a dollar a seed, you don't just throw them willy-nilly. You plant them very carefully, sometimes inside my house in a little seed cell, and water it and look at it every day and pray over it and you know, mist it with water and everything. But Jesus tells a story of a sower who is just throws it everywhere. And I think that that's a good picture of God. God just throws the grace and the love and the presence everywhere. Yet there's nowhere you can go that God isn't present, or throwing out love and grace and opportunity. So the story starts out kind of with a focus on God. But then it goes to, you know, as a gardener, probably the most important thing is to have good soil. And for me, I mean, if you looked at my garden, you would say, oh, that's dirt, right? When I look at my garden, I think, oh, that's trillions of bacteria and microorganisms and nematodes and all these things that work together so the plant can eat light and grow. The soil is alive. If it's not alive, you're not going to get anything. Organic farmers, which I try to be one, talk about feeding the soil, not the plant. You don't just dump fertilizer on a plant. You feed the soil so the soil is alive and rich. And when the soil is alive, amazing things can happen. As Barbara pointed out, you know, as Americans, it's so easy for us to read the Bible as if it was written just for me, for you, for an individual. But as a gardener, as one who wants to love God and neighbor, I don't see this parable as much about telling individuals what to do or how to be, as I see it more as a description of how together as a community we become good soil. Looking at our experience, if what Matthew says is the takeaway, that the point is understanding the message, I think about all the years of wonderful teaching that Ron has given us, or Renee, or Oliver, or Kevin, or others, or Carolyn Vance in putting together a wonderful library so we can keep understanding, increasing our understanding of justice and peace and what the kingdom of God is about. If what's important is having deep roots, and let me tell you, you can pull up a plant and right away tell whether it's going to grow or not by looking at the root structure. And if there are nice, big, white, thick roots, you know you got something good going. And I think of the community as a place where we encourage one another to dig down deep, to be deeply rooted into the presence of God and into the life of community. That if you're not rooted in it, you're going to be surprised when things get hard. And Jesus is very clear. He says, things are going to get hard. The question is, what will you do when things get hard? Will you turn away at that point, or will you let your rootedness provide nourishment and nutrition when things get hard? Then Jesus talks about, if you're a gardener like me, you have discovered what grows best in Illinois. Weeds. Nothing grows as well in my garden as weeds. They are perfectly adapted for this soil. And Jesus talks about the weeds. He says they're anxieties about our life. They're about being fooled by the desire to get rich. And I think of the community as a place where certainly I have experienced years of talking about simple living or generous giving or helping one another through the anxieties of daily life. So when the soil is well fed, amazing things can happen. Remember I said the story starts out with the sower, God, who's just throwing the seed everywhere. The grace is abundant. It's everywhere. And now we're going to kind of see something else about God, because Jesus ends the story outrageously. If you lived in Palestine at the time of Jesus, if you got a sixfold return on your seeds, you would have a normal year. If you got a tenfold increase, you would have had an absolutely outstanding year. So why would Jesus say 100 to 1, 60 to 1, 30 to 1? Well, I see that again. Well, you know, once in a while, being an obsessive compulsive gardener, I will see a plant that I think is doing really well, and I'll keep track of it. A couple years ago, I had a tomato plant that was doing well, so I kept track of it. I picked over 100 full-size, ripe, red, juicy, delicious tomatoes off of that one plant. And I was just amazed. However, what I did not do was pat myself on the back and say, what a great gardener I am. Instead of self-congratulations, I pondered the mystery of how such a tiny little seed could become a plant that eats light and provides so much joy and so much good food. This is how I think about New Covenant Fellowship. Somehow, by the grace of God and the mystery of the kingdom, we have become good soil, alive soil, productive soil, where God grows good and wonderful blessings. I look in amazement and in awe at all that has come from this holy ground. Holy, not because we've done such a good job of being holy, but holy because God has been and continues to be with us. I ponder with praise and gratitude what has been done through the holy hands that God has given us. Hands that have lived and worked throughout the United States and indeed in many places in our world. And that's how Jesus ends the story. It was hard to be a farmer in Palestine. And you plucked stones and you buried seeds and you cut thorns, which were grew kind of beyond. I mean, the thorns there are kind of like kudzu in the south. And yet, somehow when God gets involved, instead of having a little trickle of goodness 6 times coming out, 10 times coming out, all of a sudden, because God is involved, you have 30-fold, you have 60-fold, you have 100-fold, you have people going to South Africa and to Spain and to Mississippi and to starting food pantries in Iowa. And I mean, it's just absolutely amazing to see what God does with good soil. So is there an action step for this teaching? Am I going to tell you to pluck the stones or pull the weeds? Or no, I don't think so. I think the action step, if there is one, is to celebrate what God has brought to life from this holy ground and to look forward in anticipation to what God will continue to bring to life as we with, as I guess it was Luke said, with good and honest hearts, as we with good and honest hearts seek God to make us alive, to make us productive, good, rich soil, where God can bring forth 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold, as has been our history.
We're going to go now to communion. And it would just encourage you to go with that prayer in your heart that we together might continue to be fertile soil and that we might be able to see what's next for us as church, particularly as we think about our building. I want to, for our communion prayer, read a prayer from Iona Abbey. Pray with me. The table of bread and wine is now to be made ready. It is the table of company of Jesus and all who love him. It is the table of sharing with the poor of the world with whom Jesus identified himself. It is the table of communion with the earth in which Christ became incarnate. So come to this table, you who have much faith and you who would like to have more. you who have been here often, and you who have not been here for a long time. You who have tried to follow Jesus, and you who have failed, come. It is Christ who invites us to meet him here. Amen.